Hello and welcome to the inaugural Pennsylvania Politics Podcast brought to you by WITF Public Radio. I'm Katie Meyer, State Capitol Bureau Chief for WITF, and I'm speaking to you from a back office in the House Majority Leader's suite in the Capitol in Harrisburg. With me are a couple of the reporters who also work in the Bureau full-time covering state government. I'm just going to have you guys go around and introduce yourselves, starting with you.
I'm Karen Langley, and I report for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
Mark Levy, I'm a reporter for the Associated Press.
I'm Steve Essick, a reporter for the Allentown Morning Call.
All right, so what we're going to aim to do with this podcast is to give, you know, weekly state politics roundups so you, the interested Pennsylvanian, can get an inside look at what we're covering. So to start off, we're coming off of a week of the House being in session. And so there's one, I think, large overarching story, and that has been the budget. The GOP has introduced its own budget plan following Governor Tom Wolf's introduction of his plan in February. So I guess let's just start with what is in the GOP's plan and why this is all significant. Mark, do you want to start with some background?
Sure. It's almost like what's not in their plan. It's the overarching exercise here is to deal with a massive deficit the state has in the budget. And the House Republicans started out by doing a lot of cuts. There's some extra money for public schools. There's more money for intellectual disabilities, adults who are either intellectually disabled or have autism. But by and large, there are big chunks of money missing from the plan that the governor put out in February, big chunks of money for human services, for Medicaid, for prisons.
Mm-hmm. And so these chunks of money, I mean, as you said, a lot of them come from human services, a lot of them came from prisons, and that's all in place of a revenue package that Wolf had in his budget, right? So, I mean, how do we look at these and see, like, the differences in their priorities, maybe, Karen?
Well, I mean, I think big picture, what I see here is that the House Republicans are determined to spend less money than the governor proposed. Now, this is all in the context of, you know, we've come off of a couple of difficult budget years, including one that had a nearly 9-month budget impasse. And so I think that in February, we saw the governor propose a budget that was not as dramatically different from what the Republicans would want as in the previous years. This year, the Republican response had been more tempered, you know, more saying that they thought the governor had some good proposals. But even so, we see that the Republicans want to start their negotiations from a, you know, significantly lower spending point than the governor, and that's part of the context that we're going to be seeing here for the next few months at the Capitol.
And now we've seen the budget has now gone through the House. It was a House-passed budget, House GOP-led budget, and now we're going to have it go to the Senate. You know, Steve, you've covered this for years, and you've covered it before. I haven't. This is my first year. So, I mean, what can we expect from this? I mean, they started this process fairly early this year, didn't they?
Yes, they did start it fairly early, and they put it over into the Senate fairly early. So now they have to deal with it. But I think what you're going to see now that this product is out is the Capitol hallways are going to be filled with a whole lot more lobbyists looking at these cuts, looking to protect their turf, their clients' turf. I mean, we've seen it already. The State County Commissioners Association has come out strongly, basically accusing the House Republicans of forcing a tax increase on them because of the state cuts to various probation and parole for adults and juveniles, as well as some other human services type of things. They're saying that they're going to have to raise taxes on their end, and they don't want to do that. They're saying that is unfair, and then you're going to start seeing that come out everywhere else that's in this document.
And I think that's an important point that Steve makes, that it's not necessarily just an issue of more spending or less spending. It might be an issue of who is doing the spending, whether it's the state-level government or the local governments. And so it's not just Republicans and Democrats. We may be hearing from, or we would be hearing from, the municipal county officials about their perspective on this, with the county commissioners the other day saying that some of these services that the state proposes cutting funding for are services that need to be provided. And that now it'll fall to the local governments to pay for.
And Steve, you mentioned various interest groups. One of the ones that was here yesterday was drug and alcohol people, and they were protesting the consolidation of four major departments by, you know, in Wolf's plan, but also the GOP has included this component of Wolf's plan in their own plan. Now, they haven't, you know, said, okay, we're sold on this yet, but that is part of the negotiations. And I would say, Mark, this is a key component of the governor's plan, right? The consolidation of four agencies?
It is. There's been a lot of talk about it. The question is that whether moving that agency, the Department of Drug and Alcohol Programs, into a much larger department of which doesn't exist yet, but Department of Health and Human Services, whether that actually saves any money. It's sort of a superficial move, and so the question is what does Wolf lose by just kind of leaving the Department of Drug and Alcohol Services as a standalone agency? At some point, you have to decide whether it's worth the fight against a lot of people who are very passionate about what we're seeing as a crisis in opioid and prescription drug addiction. There's a lot of people who are passionate about having a very streamlined bureaucracy at the state that can deal very nimbly with needs in that direction. And Wolf himself has held himself out as very, very serious about dealing with the opioid addiction crisis.
Mm-hmm. And we've seen some drama with that, too, haven't we? I mean, yesterday there were lots of rallies in the Capitol because there was a hearing on, you know, this consolidation measure. And Gary Tennis, who used to be the Secretary of Drugs and Alcohol, was there. He's no longer the Secretary. He's sort of serving as a de facto head of this movement to not shut down, or not demote, rather, drug and alcohol to a non-cabinet position. So, I mean, Steve, were you going to say anything you want to add on that?
Well, I don't think the drug and alcohol position has been a cabinet position for very long.
No, it's only 2012, right?
Yeah, and so the federal government has all these agencies under one umbrella. So it becomes a matter of just moving the chairs around on the Titanic type of thing, but also it gives Wolf some political ammo in his reelection bid that says, I cut the size of state government by consolidating all these agencies into one. And there's also the movement, longstanding movement, at least in the time I've been here, also of consolidating corrections and probation and parole. The Senate Democrats have asked for that for as long as I've been here. So you also have that aspect, but no one is really talking about that. It's really a matter of, do people want to give up their fiefdoms? And Wolf can and has pointed to, well, the feds do it over here, and lots of other states also have everything under there. So he has that aspect going with them. And the Republicans, for that matter, who have said we need to, you know, right-size government, can also point to that politically and say we did that.
So. Right. And so now then getting into, you know, this question of where do we get money? Where is money actually going to be available? Because I don't think we can overstate, like, there's a $3 billion deficit in this budget that they're contending with. And the GOP has been very adamant that they don't want broad-based taxes. So that would be no personal income tax, no increase in sales taxes. So Wolf, in his budget, went to niche taxes, right? So, I mean, we saw things like a corporate sales tax, that sort of thing. You know, like the GOP, and I'll open this up to anybody, they've been very resistant to any sort of tax increase, right? And that's why we're seeing these, you know, broad cuts in their budget. Anybody want
right. So I think the thing that's been unsaid so far is that Wolf, as part of his budget, which was relatively austere compared to his first two, you know, big kind of vision budgets, this one had a $1 billion tax package with, like you said, kind of very narrowly tailored tax increases. One which is on the Marcellus Shale natural gas drilling industry, which, you know, Tom Wolf ran on taxing them. Pennsylvania is the only major natural gas state without an extraction tax. There was also expanding the sales tax to kind of, you know, some business-to-business transactions. But there was also an insurance premiums tax that he would have extended as part of that. But, you know, every penny of it was left out of the House Republican budget, and the House Republicans sort of adopted many of the cuts that Wolf made. They made a bunch more of their own cuts, and then said, we've got an $8 million hole in this that we think we can fill with lots more gambling, taxes and fees on lots more gambling, and moving lots more liquor and wine sales to the private sector.
So liquor and gambling, since I've been here, and I know since before I've been here, these have been sort of the go-to fixes for, you know, filling any revenue holes that you may have. So, Karen, I mean, like, what have you seen with the Republicans and the Democrats trying to utilize these movements to varying degrees of success?
Well, I think, you know, of interest in the fact that both the governor and the House Republicans are pointing to expanded gambling, for example, to bring in some of the revenue necessary for next year's budget, is the fact that the current year's budget was also balanced in part using a plan to get money from expanded gambling. That has not happened. We're now, you know, the better part of the way through that year. And so this contributes to the amount of money that will have to be made up. And, you know, they're saying, well, we are still going to expand gambling and, you know, now pay for parts of both years doing that. Gambling is an issue that is not, you know, as cut down the lines politically in terms of the political parties as some other issues. It can depend, you know, where the person is from or the legislator is from, and it's not just, you know, Republican or Democrat. We saw differences between the chambers, with the Senate being more reluctant to have a big expansion of gambling last time. We'll have to see, you know, what plays out this time around as they continue need to fill that hole in the budget.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, gambling revenue, liquor revenue, I know last year's, this current year's budget was balanced in large part on a new tax on cigarettes. I mean, Steve, like, are these funds, how consistent are they? How reliable even are they?
Well, they're sin taxes. They're not really that reliable because fewer people are smoking.
Right.
So
I just want to clarify. So you said sin tax. So basically, it's like taxing people's vices.
Yes. Yeah. So cigarette tax revenue is going down because fewer people are smoking. So, and you saw that tracking down even in the state's long-term revenue numbers. And so even their revenue projections for that haven't matched up. The same thing with the wine sales. You know, people aren't suddenly going to Wegmans and drinking a whole lot more wine because it's in Wegmans. I mean, yeah, it's not the projections aren't adding up. The same thing with the, you know, corporate revenue projections aren't adding up. The sales tax revenues aren't adding up. I mean, income, it's all, you know, it's very anemic in this state. The state's getting older. Its unemployment rate is still higher than a lot of other places. So there's a whole host of issues that this state has got problems with. And it's not just looking at those vices, those type of taxes.
And we've had discussions, and I think lawmakers are fairly aware of this, in the last really decade of budgets, we've made some changes, but a lot of the changes have been incremental, right? I mean, there haven't been too many huge, you know, budget balancing shifts that have taken place. Would you guys say, I mean, there's been a lot of talk this year about restructuring government. So how have we seen them trying to maybe make a change from previous years? Have we seen that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Republicans in December started with a sort of a new way of talking about the budget, and they were talking about reinventing government, and they, you know, some big words they were using. And in the end, what the House Republicans passed was a budget that just basically cut spending, and some of the cuts are big and unexplained, and we're talking about mandatory programs like health care for the poor, you know, Medicaid and prisons, you know. So, you know, the budgets from year to year have been relatively stable. There's been a lot of sort of gymnastics to move money off budget or postpone payments or move money from off budget funds to cover a deficit that, you know, the state's really been unable to deal with since the recession. You know, the previous governor, Tom Corbett, made a major cut to education spending, and it didn't really help fix the deficit because tax collections have just been relatively stagnant. And so, you know, like Steve said, this is an old state. It's got problems. And, you know, one of the things that I think hung over the whole, like, weeks of budget hearings here was when the IFO, the Independent Fiscal Office, which is a creature of the legislature, pointed out that there's going to be like, I think the number is like 600,000 more people in this state who are like older than 65 in a decade. I mean, that is just a staggering number, and that's going to bring with it staggering costs. And, you know, so, you know, they're poking around the margins with, you know, grabbing money from gambling and liquor and cigarettes. But there are big things afoot in this state and big problems.
Mm-hmm. And I'll just note, and this is, I mean, something that we don't have to get too far into because this could be an hour on its own. But, you know, part of that aging population thing is, you know, driving up human services costs. And also we have, you know, a huge pension overhead. And that has a lot to do with, you know, the fact that it's expensive to pay for state retirees. And there's lots of them. Steve, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Mark had mentioned the catchphrase restructuring government, and I get a kick out of restructuring government unless it's in their backyard. For example, when the governor and Correction Secretary John Wetzel wanted to close two of four prisons down, you saw a whole lot of lawmakers, both Republican and Democrat, saying, "Not in my backyard. That is an economic engine. It's a prison. It's supposed to hold inmates, but it also involves all these jobs and that sort of thing." And we're going to see that same thing play out in Pennsylvania on a far greater scale when the state, the university system finishes their study of what needs to happen to these 14 universities that are costing a ton of money and there's fewer kids going to them. So this whole restructuring government issue is really, really going to be fascinating to watch when that issue hits.
And that's, to clarify, so the Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education, 14 state universities, many of them, most of them are having financial difficulties, some worse than others, and some to the point where they may have to close. So they're looking at a study to restructure there. So just in terms of the budget, I know it's a huge, it's a wide-ranging issue. We've covered a lot of components of it. Anything else that, like, any of you guys are looking at in the next couple of weeks that we're going to see? Obviously, this bill, this measure that the House put together goes to the Senate now. And, I mean, it passed the House very quickly in, like, 2 days. The Senate, it's probably going to have a tougher time, right? So, Karen?
It's a week and a half until the legislators return. They return after Easter weekend, and when I think both the Senate and the House will be back. And the response from the Senate Republican leader's office to this House Republican plan has been pretty muted so far, you know, said that they look forward to taking a look at it. You know, just because Republicans are in charge in both chambers doesn't mean that they are always on the same page. Both chambers like to, you know, put their stamp on things. And so, you know, we will have to see how quickly the Senate Republicans do anything with this. It may be that you know, negotiations just now start, and that there may not be more bills flying back and forth, you know, strictly on the general appropriations until there is more of a consensus, you know, either among all the parties or, you know, perhaps just among the Republicans in both sides of the building. But I think we don't, you know just when this is going to be happening. It's a while until June 30th when the fiscal year ends.
Yeah, about 3 months left. Steve and Mark, anything else you want to add?
Well, I think, too, another issue that is directly tied to this budget, because the governor put it in there, is this fee that he's asking municipalities to pay for full-time state police coverage. Just a couple days ago, a Democratic lawmaker had a bill to have an even higher fee. There's a Republican lawmaker, Stan Saller, who's in charge of the Appropriations Committee in the House. He also has his own type of fee bill. But I noticed that no fee proposal was in the House Republicans' budget. But they have to come up with that money because, based on another law from last year, they have to stop allowing the state police to use so much of their budget based on our gasoline taxes and our fuel taxes that are supposed to go to roads and bridges. So they have that hammer hanging over their head on that. So that's going to be another issue to watch.
Right, and that's been a huge one. The state police gets a lot of its money, and it covers a lot of municipalities that don't have their own police forces. That money is often coming from the road. What's the fund called? Is it highways?
It's the motor license fund, and constitutionally, the money is supposed to go towards highway safety.
Yeah.
And the fact that we now know from a couple of studies that have been done that some of it is paying for, you know, the state police to respond to 911 calls in a lot of suburban and rural towns around the state, we now know that that is quite likely unconstitutional, that it's paying for that. And you know, the other shoe being that you have a lot of people in the state who do pay for their own police force. They do pay that cost, so there's a sense that they're paying twice.
Right. And so Wolf's proposal in his budget would be a $25 fee that's levied, you know, I think per person or per household?
On 2.5 million people.
Yes. So any of those people in those municipalities that don't have their own police forces, they would now have to pay that fee in order to get covered by state police.
Which, by the way, is probably a great deal for a full-time state police.
Right. And we've heard different arguments on that.
Yeah. Just to give an example, there was a rural township in the Lehigh Valley. One of their officials called it a bargain that the governor was offering. Another neighboring township, however, said that's not fair because we already pay our state taxes, and that's another argument. So you have basically places like Allentown, Bethlehem, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and so forth paying twice, but you also have someone already paying once. So at what point does it all meet?
Right. So a lot of interlocking issues. And now moving off the budget just briefly, there's also been a couple other bills that have moved this week. Steve, I know you covered mandatory minimum sentences that passed finally in the House yesterday. It goes on to the Senate now. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that? That was one of the bigger bills this week.
That's a bill by State Representative Todd Stevens, a Republican from Montgomery County, former assistant prosecutor in Montgomery County, and his bill would reinstate some mandatory minimum sentences for some drug crimes and violent crimes, because the state Supreme Court in 2015 rejected those or shot them down based on a procedural rule that said that a jury had to find that that issue was germane to the case, and that followed a U.S. Supreme Court case. However, you know, the state also has sentencing guidelines, not wide-ranging guidelines, pretty tight guidelines that says what a judge can sentence somebody to on the low range and the high range for various crimes. And if they go beyond that range, either below or above, they have to state in open court their reasons for doing that. And the argument is that every case is its own separate animal, and therefore the judge should have the ability, based on their knowledge of the law and the circumstances of the case, to make a single determination rather than have the state legislature dictate what that length of prison should be and that kind of thing. And there's the other argument too, that it's the prosecutors only want that as a hammer over the defendant to get a better sentencing deal.
Right. And I know, like, I was always like very in the weeds on all the legal stuff. It gets very complicated. But basically the outcome of that was most of the Democrats didn't want prosecutors pushing for these very long sentences on drug crimes, right?
And they didn't want them to be mandatory.
Right.
They wanted the discretion to be with the judge to figure out when a really long sentence is appropriate.
And I think we had an estimate from the correction secretary that, you know, keeping these people in prison longer is going to cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $80 million over the next year.
$85 million. And what the House passed is running counter to the national trend. Many states have started reducing their mandatory minimum sentences more on a financial aspect. There's very powerful lobbying groups, anti-taxing groups out there that are saying that it's not right for the taxpayer to pay to house these inmates for so long when there really is no definitive proof that mandatory minimums reduce crime in any way, shape, or form. And in 2009, Pennsylvania's own sentencing commission came out with a study that said that.
And the vote also runs counter. If those projections about costs are accurate, then it also runs counter to the budget that the House passed like just a day earlier, this week, that would have significantly cut Department of Corrections spending, you know, while then, you know, driving up costs.
Right. So a lot of conflicting priorities in that bill. Anything else that you guys have been following this week or are looking forward to maybe when the Senate and the House come back into session, I think the 18th? Because other than that, I think we've been really been focused on just the budget this week, right?
Yeah, the budget this week, there's, I think up until now, the House and the Senate have been dealing with some more controversial bills that they kind of wanted to get off their plate. We saw an abortion bill pass through the Senate. There's also some juggling of an unemployment comp bill that would try to flush some money back into the unemployment compensation system. It's been sort of a fight here over how much money the state should be spending to have people answering unemployment compensation calls, dealing with jobless benefits.
Right, and that's been an issue that's come up since November when for background, the unemployment compensation issue happened when there was a conflict between the Senate and the governor, and which resulted after a fact with 500 people being, I think it was like 499 people being laid off from the unemployment compensation centers. And so that's turned into a very partisan political battle over funding.
Well, let's not forget about the it's always election time in Pennsylvania. So we have a governor's race coming up, and it's kind of heating up, at least on the Republican side. You see names coming in. State Senator Scott Wagner of York, he's been in for quite some time. Paul Mango, businessman from Western PA, is hinted and came out during the recent meeting that, yeah, he's in. And House Speaker Mike Terzai's political folks are out there throwing his name around now more vocally than ever. So That's starting to heat up, too, and get interesting.
And we've heard some more names as well. I feel like we've heard, like, every Republican's name in the book. I know Jake Corman, the Senate Majority Leader, has said he's not running. He was in the running for – he was being mentioned a little bit. Dave Reed, the House Majority Leader, may be in the mix. He may run for something else.
There's discussion that maybe he would run for U.S. Senate, you know. But, mm-hmm. yeah, everyone wants their name out there. I was told once that the worst thing in the world in the Capitol building is to be ignored.
That's probably true. All right.
Well, yes. Along those notes, let's not forget State Representative Rick Saccone is an announced candidate for U.S. Senate against Democrat Bob Casey.
Right. That is true. And Bob Casey, would this be his third term in the Senate?
Yeah, he's running for a third 6-year term in the 2018 election.
All right. There we go. And he is also Pat Toomey, the other U.S. Senator from Pennsylvania, a Republican, was just reelected this year in a very close election. So he is safe for the time being. Any other elections? I think, well, the governor's election is not happening until 2018.
We do have the courts elections are up this year. And so there's an open seat on the state Supreme Court. That won't change the balance of power on the state Supreme Court. Democrats will still hold it regardless of who wins this seat. Should a Democrat win it, it would really consolidate the Democrats' newfound hold on the court at 6-1. There's a Republican sitting in it right now, and she, Sally Mundy, is running for that seat. And so if she wins, it would maintain the current balance of 5 Democrats, 2 Republicans.
All right. So I think that's probably a good place to end for this week. Again, I'm Katie Meyer from WITF Public Radio. Thank you to Karen Langley from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
Thank you.
Mark Levy from the AP and Steve Essick from The Morning Call. Appreciate you guys coming on here for this first politics podcast.
Thank you.
Looking forward to the next one.
All right.